is it that we find ourselves surrounded by such complexity, such elegance?
The genes of you and me, the genes of you and me, are all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.
Hello, you're listening to DNA Today, a genetics podcast and radio show. I'm your host, Kira Dineen. DNA Today informs you on what's happening in the genetic world. During my broadcast, I educate you, the public, on genetic and health topics through event coverage, news stories, book movie reviews, and interviews. Guests include genetic counselors, researchers, patient advocates, and professors in the field of genetics. Happy Rare Disease Day. That is today, the 28th of February. And to celebrate, I attended the event in Hartford, Connecticut, in the legislative building. So we were in this atrium, and legislators were walking around, kind of looking in and saying, what's going on here, and learning about rare diseases. And so we were raising awareness. So I'm going to be recapping the event today and featuring two interviews, one with Michelle Cotton, who is a patient advocate and mom of a child with a rare disease. The other interview is with Representative Dave Yaccarino, who spoke to me about the legislation's impact on biotech and rare diseases. Before I get into how the event went, I want to highlight a few facts about rare diseases to help you understand the community better and just how many people rare diseases affect. So individually, rare diseases are scarce. I mean, obviously, that's why we call them rare. But together, they're actually quite common. So 30 million Americans have a rare disease. So when you hear 30 million, you're like, how is that rare at all? But that's putting all the rare diseases together. 30 million Americans ends up being 1 in 10 people in America. So 1 in 10 is the stat thrown around about how many people are affected by rare diseases. More than half of those living with a rare disease are children. So we're talking about now 30% of these children will not live to see their fifth birthday. So these are really serious diseases in most cases. Obviously, rare diseases encompass a lot of different types of diseases. And there's actually over 7,000 rare diseases that we know about. And we're discovering more and more every year. But we know that there's over 7,000, and 1 in 10 Americans are affected by a rare disease, with half of those being children. So the event I went to today was sponsored by NORD, the National Organization for Rare Disorders, and their headquarters are actually in Connecticut, in Danbury, Connecticut. And these events were held throughout the world celebrating rare diseases and raising awareness of rare diseases. So these events targeted legislators, legislative staff, the public, and the media to raise that awareness of the needs of the rare disease community. And it's vital to educate our state legislators about the many challenges that the rare disease community faces, because there's a lot of important decisions that kind of rests upon what happens at the state level. So at the event I went to, there was lots of different speakers, people with rare diseases, some legislators got up there and kind of spoke, researchers, caregivers, advocates. And some of the companies and institutions represented were Alexion Pharmaceuticals, Connecticut Children's Medical Center, UConn, and Yale. Those were kind of the big names. And there was a lot of small organizations that support patients more directly. And so the people that are part of those organizations were there as well. Vanessa Proctor, who is the executive director of Global Governmental Affairs at Alexion, when she got up there, she kind of spoke about the global pharmaceutical companies' focus on bringing therapy to market for rare diseases. So they're really focused on bringing the research into the patient's house of actually them getting treatment. Professor David Goldenhammer is the associate director of the UConn Stem Cell Institute, and he shared about his research on FOP. And it's really interesting because his team uses mouse models that have the same mutation as over 90% of FOP patients. So most FOP patients have the same mutation, which is why it's great research-wise to put in a mouse, and you have a mouse with the same genetics and the same, well, not the same genetics overall because they are a mouse, they're not a human, but the same mutation as most of FOP patients. And so that's where the research comes in and kind of looking for treatments and cures there. patient advocates, researchers, and people afflicted by glycogen storage disorders also shared their inspiring ongoing journey of finding a cure, and this was kind of interesting to hear. So Galen Temkin is the founder of Alyssa's Angels Fund and the mother of Alyssa, and Alyssa has a glycogen storage disorder. And so her mom was recounting when Dr. David Weinstein sat in her living room talking about how close he was to finding a cure, and she asked him to move from Florida, where he currently resided with his team, to Connecticut to finish his work and so that they would be able to kind of continue a close relationship and benefit from his work. And so the team did just that. They all moved from Florida up to Connecticut, and they started the glycogen storage disorder program at Connecticut Children's Medical Center, which is obviously in Connecticut. And since they've moved up, they've treated patients from 45 states and 45 countries. So they really have expanded a lot. And as I'll kind of repeat throughout the episode, Connecticut is really becoming a leader in improving the rare disease community and finding treatments and finding cures and really being a great support network. Connecticut and Massachusetts are kind of the leaders in this. Another mother who has gone above and beyond for her child is Michelle Cotton, who I caught up with after the event. So we're here at Rare Disease Day 2017, and I'm going to introduce my guest.
I'm Michelle Cotton. I'm a parent of a rare disease survivor of SCAD, which is a fatty oxidation disorder. His name is Michael.
And so can you kind of take us through kind of how it's been to be Michael's mom and caretaker in so many roles in his life and just how his rare disease has impacted him and your family?
His rare disease impacted us because it changed us all as a family. He was diagnosed when he was 3 days old by his heel stick that he had in the hospital as a newborn screening. And as you know, they do test for about 40 rare diseases in the state of Connecticut. And unfortunately, he was diagnosed with one. So it was actually about 7 days. We were home, and they called and said, "Is he breathing?" And I said, "Wait a second, what are you talking about? This is a pediatrician." And I said, "You know, what are you talking about?" And they said, "No, check on him. Make sure he's breathing. Has he been eating?" And I'm like, "Yeah, he's fine. Why?" And so they named this disorder called SCAD. It's short chain acetyl dehydrogenase deficiency. And what it is it's a fatty oxidation disorder. In other words, his liver doesn't produce the enzyme that processes fats. So like you and I could go days, weeks without eating. He can't go more than like 2 or 3 hours awake, moving. You know, I mean, he's 7 now. He runs all over the place. He goes through calories very quickly. He can go now 12 hours sleeping. But in the beginning, he couldn't go more than 2 hours. You have to wake yourself up all night long, just like having a newborn. And it just continues on. He was like 2 or 3 years old before we can go to more than 2 hours. So you get no sleep. You're always worried about your child. And waking up, make sure he's breathing. So we feed him very, very frequently. And that generally is the fix. But the problem is he goes into crisis a lot. So, like, he's been hospitalized 13 times, but he's been in crisis numerous more than that, and that we've salvaged the situation by feeding him at home. Sometimes, you know, a newborn won't eat, refuses to eat, and they become a limp rag because they're in crisis from his disorder, so we have to bring him right to the hospital. When he was 3 months old, we brought him to daycare, and he caught a flu the first week, go figure, and he was in the hospital and unresponsive. So that was his first hospitalization. It's just gone on from there. And it's just, it's funny because, you know, you could see him running around. He looks like a normal child. You know, you don't think anything's wrong with him. So people discount, you know, "Oh, no, he's fine, he's fine." And he's really not. So we've had a lot of problems with doctors and stuff not taking us seriously. So especially his first day of kindergarten, we had our 504 plan in place, which I had to fight to put in place 3 months prior. 2 days before school started, we had the 504 meeting. I had all the teachers around, the principal, everybody saying, "Oh, yeah, yeah, we know, we know." And I gave them packets on the information on his disorder, everything. They said, "Oh, no, it'll be fine, it'll be fine." He gets off the bus first day of kindergarten. Nobody called me. Nobody told me that he hadn't eaten his lunch. He was staring off into space. Within a few hours, he was unresponsive in the hospital, almost died.
And that was first day of kindergarten?
Yep. So first day public school. Now I'm PTA president. I'm involved. You know, I mean, I'm there all the time. You know, everybody knows him now. I mean, even the mayor, you know, will high five him on the street. Everybody knows him now. That's why we're trying to be so much of an advocate in the state to, you know, try to get some more, you know, laws, some more things in place for these rare disorders or any medical condition. Everybody knows about autism and asthma and all these common things, but they don't know about the uncommon things. I mean, even if somebody has a child with a heart condition or anything, the schools don't know how to deal with it. So that's really where I'm focusing on. I'm trying to get more information in the schools. You know, I go to all the council meetings and everything else, trying to get more information, trying to get people to know him. But also, it's not just our town of Milford. I want everybody to get on board with this stuff.
And having that education piece is so key, because not only are you educating people about your son, but you're also educating people about other people's daughters and sons. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned at the beginning that your son was identified as having a rare disease through newborn screening. Mm-hmm. So that's something that your family has really been an advocate for, of making sure that Connecticut has these under newborn screening, and so people are caught early on and so they can have an intervention. Mm-hmm. How does that work if there isn't an intervention, if we didn't have newborn screening and didn't have these diseases on here?
That's the problem, unfortunately, because there's so many rare diseases. So many people are not diagnosed until, I was just talking to a mom before, until they were 16, all of a sudden crashed for whatever reason and are in the hospital on breathing tubes. And they don't know where to go, and they're asking me, well, what do I do? Well, it's hard because you don't know the other genetic disorders. You don't know, you know who to point them to, but still, it has. If you don't have a diagnosis when they're first born, I mean, you're just on a diagnostic roller coaster, all these tests, and it's expensive. I mean, he's had 13 hospitalizations, like I said. We went on our first plane flight to Miami, and he crashed on the plane and almost didn't make it off the plane. $16,000 for a non-private hospital room and just a dextrose IV. And that was it, $16,000. I mean, our insurance picks up some. Well, if you don't have insurance, well, if you don't know what it is, well, if you're still going through testing, you're going into financial hardship or disaster at that point, and you don't know where to go, and you feel defenseless as a parent. So that's why I'm trying to help right now.
And a lot of families go through that, of just not having the money to be able to afford treatments, and that's across all rare diseases and beyond. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have for families that may be in that situation of resources, maybe they can see, or how they can contact their legislators and say, please support this bill, or do you have any advice for them?
I say contact your legislatures. You might be able to get a bill in place. Contact your local genetic group. Like NORD is fantastic, National Organization of Rare Disorders. They will usually.
And they're located right in Danbury, Connecticut. Connecticut here is their headquarters.
Exactly. That's why we want to get the bill in place. My husband, Dominic Cotton, just helped write the bill, H.R. 6009, to get a rare disease council in place so we can get more information. He's working more on the bill in the state level, and I'm working more on the local level. Between the two of us, hopefully we'll get more information out there so other states can follow suit. Because between Massachusetts and Connecticut, we're really the only states doing anything right now.
And being the leaders in Connecticut and Massachusetts right next door, are there ways that people can kind of support these efforts that maybe aren't in the rare disease community, or kind of just trickling into the community and joining?
The problem is, if you have a diagnosis, you could find a support group. You can Google it now. I mean, that's a lot easier. A Facebook group. There's tons of Facebook groups now for different disorders. If you can't get a diagnosis, I would say speak to NORD, because they could really point you in the right direction. The problem is whether you have a diagnosis or not, and that really binds you there, because then you don't know even who to talk to or where to go. In our FOD group, it's fodsupport.org. A lot of parents will come in, and we screen members, so make sure it's all family members or people afflicted with a rare disease with a fatty oxidation disorder. But sometimes we'll let people in and say, okay, well, you know, they might not be sure what their diagnosis is, so they'll ask us a ton of questions, and then maybe they're going down the right road, and they'll stay, and they'll have an answer. sometimes not. We had a family maybe 6 months ago say they moved to a different state. You know, they're talking at their new job to their boss and all of the people about their child with a rare disorder, fatty oxidation disorder. And there was a coworker that couldn't quite pinpoint what was wrong with their child, and it was a fatty oxidation disorder. So it's just talking to people. So go into the support groups, even if it's not the disease that you think it is. Still, you might get an answer. You might go down the right route.
And as parents of, you know, children of rare diseases, you guys really are the experts. You see everything, and you are learning so much about these diseases that oftentimes you know more about doctors, more than doctors, about certain disorders. Do you find yourself educating doctors and people that may have more degrees than you?
Case in point, one of his crises, we went to the hospital, went to the ER, and he's pre-registered. We had our protocol letter in hand. You know, I called the head of pediatrics because she's a friend of mine now, and said, look, you know, we're headed to the hospital. She called them, let them know we're going in. Needless to say, they went and took the protocol letter. The head ER doc looked at it, patted me on the back, and said, oh, it'll be okay, honey. No, that's not acceptable. So I kept saying, no, you need to start his IV right away. You know, call the head of pediatrics. You know, if you don't believe me, read this. If you don't believe me, whatever, call his geneticist. They kept patting me on the back. Well, needless to say, she did not start his IV. His eyes rolled in back into his head, and he was unresponsive, and we almost lost him because of her. She no longer works there because I called for her resignation or firing. I said, I don't care. I don't want her there anymore. You need to listen. If you don't know an answer and the parent is saying something, don't think, oh, crazy parent. And that's what most of the time I look like, is crazy parent. But you know what? He's alive today because of that. And that's all that matters. We do it, and I do it for my little bug. I mean, that's all that matters.
And kind of just reminding parents that sometimes you will know more than the doctor, and that can be frustrating and scary, but to say that, hey, this is my kid. I know what's best for my kid.
Our whole support group, you know, you see somebody just come into the group and they start posting, you know, oh my God, this is what's going on. I don't know what to say. I'm in the ER. And we'll all fire a whole bunch of questions or statements, you know, to ask the doctors. And we help them until they get the guts to stand up on their own. And I was a very meek person before this all started. I honestly, you know, I got in shape. I lost weight. I became a personal trainer. I learned about nutrition because of him. And that's the only reason I did it all, was because of him. And honestly, you know, he's my inspiration, because, you know, now he knows to fight for a snack or whatever, or tell the teachers, you know, I need this. And he's finally just turning 7 and just becoming his own voice. But the patients have to become their own voice. But these parents, I mean, I feel so bad when they have a newborn and they don't know how to phrase things. It's difficult.
It's hard. Yeah, and I have to just commend you and every other parent out there that is fighting for their kid that has a rare disease. And just the support groups you guys have, just, you know, me looking in as an outsider, are really, really impactful in just how much you embrace each other and support each other. So I want to thank you on behalf of, you know, everybody out there for all of your hard work of really just being someone that's such an advocate and dedicating your life to it.
Well, I mean, we had a video go viral a few years ago. The only reason it went the only reason we had the video was because we met up with another parent that had a child with the same disorder. And because of that video going viral, we became more vocal also. We had a lot of interviews across the world about his disorder. And I think that made a difference also, because now everybody thinks rare disorder when they see that stupid video. And honestly, it helps. Whatever helps get the voice out, you know, I can care less, as long as, you know, we help other parents and hopefully we're making a change.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Madison Shaw, founder of Maddie's Herd, mediated a panel of other kids with rare diseases, and they were sharing what disease they had, how it affects their life, and what they like to do for fun. And it was really cool to hear kids speak of how doctors, researchers, and caregivers have really changed their lives and how they want to change other people's lives and advocate for other kids with rare diseases. So that was kind of touching to see them get up there and really speak in front of a crowd, because some of the kids were quite young. Dr. Mustafa Kokria of Yale Genetics focused on the importance of utilizing exome sequencing to identify and find mutations causing these rare diseases. So by finding the mutations, more tailored treatments can be developed for patients by saying, this is where the mutation's happening, because we can make mouse models, like I mentioned before, and other things. And she mentioned that Connecticut is the perfect place to do this, and that we can transform rare disease research here. Now, the event had an overall focus on Connecticut's potential to become an even larger leading force in the fight for rare diseases. Fran Reed of Cure GSD, which again is the glycogen storage disorders, said, quote, Connecticut can be a national leader. A few legislators standing up can change the world. And so what they were saying is really that having support on the state level is really important to reach this goal of Connecticut being a national leader in rare diseases. And this is why Fran, among others, are urging you, the public, to contact your senators in support of Bill HB 6009. I'll repeat that. Bill HB 6009. And it'll be on my website, dnapodcast.com. But this bill is an act to create a permanent rare disease advisory council. And so going to make a much longer lasting impact by having a permanent rare disease advisory council. So you can contact your senators to support Bill HB 6009. And to get a better understanding of the impact of legislation, I asked Representative Dave Yarcarino, the 87th District Assembly, his role in advocating for rare diseases and biotech companies in Connecticut. So I'm here, Rare Disease Day 2017, and I want to introduce my guest here. Why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Dave Yacarino, representative for the town of North Haven, the 87th District, and thank you, Kara, for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on the program. And today is all about supporting rare diseases and bringing rare attention to rare diseases within. We're in the Capitol building right now, and as people walk by, they're saying, what's going on here? We're talking about rare diseases. So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you're advocating for rare diseases, but also the larger picture of biotech companies and increasing that industry within Connecticut?
Well, thank you for that question. Approximately four years ago, I met Hunter Peju with Senator Fasano. We met him at a fundraiser in North Haven with SMARD, a spinal muscular atrophy distress. It's a rare disease, and with every rare disease, you have to have awareness. So we came back, Len and I, and we put a bill in for Rare Disease Day for SMARD, which passed a couple of years ago, and it had gave me a great interest seeing the inspiration of Hunter and folks, young folks and older folks with rare diseases. With, like I said, with every rare disease, you have to have the awareness for the cure. So we haven't had a cure yet, but we have companies in Connecticut like Jackson Labs and UConn and Yale that are working on these diseases and Mount Sinai. And I've always had a strong interest in bioscience and technology and science, and especially genetic research. So it's given me more inspiration seeing Hunter and folks like Hunter to try to do something about it.
And how can we expand the biotech industry in Connecticut? And do you see that expanding it is going to have a big impact and we can have a bigger voice within the world of biotech industries? Can we kind of become one of the leading voices within the community?
I really believe we can. How you do it is you have to have companies, venture capitalists, or companies that want to come to Connecticut because of our tax purposes, which we have pretty good tax purposes, our plans rather, except for the investment part and the research part. And how you do that is from one company to the next company, it's through competition. So in New Haven, we have Yale University, one of the great research companies in the colleges in the world, Mount Sinai, which does genetic works, molecular biology, DNA sequencing in Brantford, Alexion, and many other companies. So, yes, we have UConn. They do a great job, and we have Jackson Labs. But I believe in the cluster formation of it, where companies, people come here, they work and live, and they can go to the next company, which it's in a 15 or 20-mile radius, like they do in Palo Alto, like it's been done in Massachusetts. 6 years ago, Cambridge did well, but not. It was maybe in the middle of the pack for world-renowned research. Now it's the leader in the world because the state government, the private sector, the academia all partnered together to expand. They saw the need. They saw the job creation part. They saw the health benefit part with the hospitals. So for me, and hopefully other legislators in this building, that we could really harness the great strengths we have here, but build off those to create many high-paying jobs, not just in the science area, but the technology area, the data processing area, the jobs for construction folks, for site work, for manufacturers to develop valves for these companies. It's really a multifaceted industry that it's just a multiplier, which helps really society as a whole.
And it helps just Connecticut's business in that our economy will increase if we have these bigger companies coming and being that leader in the field, and as you said, creating more jobs, which is just going to help overall.
And if you look at the young folks like yourself, we're one of the oldest states in the country. Our median age is about 42, 43. So a lot of these companies, it's the creativity, the energy that they bring to the region, and that you want to bring young folks to work at these companies. A lot of times you could have the degree in biology or molecular biology or even computer sciences, but they'll train you further for their company. And that's generally bringing older people and younger people together to work to create that atmosphere, that energy, and that vibrancy.
And that's one of those things that, you know, we learn a lot in schools, but once we get into certain jobs, we're learning even more in terms of how we're actually going to affect people by doing those jobs and being trained.
And I find I did a TV show at Mount Sinai in Brantford with Todd Arnold, PhD. They actually hire folks from the graduate degrees, undergraduate degrees, but even associate's degrees, and they'll train you, and they'll send you back to school. It's a great industry. It truly is. And Connecticut has always done well, but I think we could do so much better. And I always believe, I think President Kennedy said this years ago, anything hard is worthwhile. You have to shoot, you have to really shoot, like he shot for the moon. People thought he was like, how could he get to the moon in 10 years? But if it's hard, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. It's hard because it's going to be worthwhile in the end. And I believe for the benefit of society, for healthcare, for folks in general, in jobs, I believe it's the right way to go.
And Connecticut really has the potential, as you said, and I want to thank you and other legislators for really giving people a voice in the rare disease community and, you know, overall of just biotech and really being an advocate for us and creating that.
No, thank you. And you know, like today's Rare Disease Day at the Capitol. We have to do something with it now. The inspiration of the folks, unfortunately, with the diseases, their families, but it's incumbent on us in science, which I think we all want to do it, we all want to work together to get something done. And I think Connecticut could be the leader. I'm very proud to live here and work here and raise my family here.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the program.
Thank you.
Another website I want to plug is doyourshare.com. It's a supporting website featuring community stories, and it's an opportunity for those that live with rare diseases or those involved in the community to share their story and get involved in areas from awareness and advocacy and research and donation. So check it out. It debuted today. Doyourshare.com. It's got all kinds of cool patient stories on here that I can't fit into one episode. So check it out. Doyourshare.com. That about wraps up today's episode of DNA Today. All episodes and notes on shows can be found at dnapodcast.com. I'm on Twitter at dnapodcast. You can interact with me on there. Any questions you maybe can't fit in a tweet can be sent to info@dnapodcast.com. And the one I really want to plug is iTunes. I am listed in iTunes, so search DNA Today to rate, review. Subscribe is the big one. Subscribing gets all episodes automatically downloaded to your devices, so you don't have to check back with the show. It's just going to be waiting for you to listen. And I would really appreciate rates and reviews there. It is newly listed. It was listed previously, but brand new feed on there. So just search DNA Today. I'm the first one that pops up. You'll recognize the huge DNA strand icon. Thanks for listening and join me next week to learn and discover new advances in the world of genetics.
We're all made of DNA. We're all made of the same chemical DNA.